The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, Jerichoholics, are you ready for part two with the most iconic figure in WWE history? Are you ready to get caught up in Hulkamania? Today's talk is Jericho, brother. Let's get it rolling, because part two of my amazing sit-down conversation with Hulk Hogan is up today, and you're not going to be disappointed. We're talking WrestleMania 1, Andre the Giant, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior, TNA. We cover it all and so much more. The most revealing interview with Hulk Hogan ever. All you people have been saying it. I appreciate it. Hulk even texted me to tell me how much love he's getting from everyone on social media. This is a whole new Hulkster. You don't want to miss part two. And if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to part one.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho. Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho. The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride with the return of the illustrious Spee-Wee.
We did Spee-Wee part one, become an internet sensation.
I believe in you.
You've had three or four Twitter followers to add. Facebook's crazy. And it was your birthday yesterday.
I got asked to be on another podcast.
You got asked to be hired on a podcast.
Hired,
Hired. Yeah, they wanted you to come join the show.
I blocked them.
But let's be honest. We've tried this a couple of times, and we've just been arguing. We had to stop it two times before. Just arguing with each other about everything.
I didn't like the questions.
Well, yeah, you didn't. Yeah, you wanted me to submit a list of questions that I could ask you before you came on the air. Didn't do that with William Shatner, who has a Hollywood Walk of Star fame. Mm-hmm. Didn't do it with Paul Stanley, Rock and Hall of Famer.
No.
Didn't do it with Hulk Hogan, WWE Hall of Famer.
Never had to restart
ever. Not once. No. Actually, I've been doing this. I think, I've done over 100 episodes of Talk is Jericho. Never had to restart an interview once.
Yeah, I come with demands. I have a lot of demands. I didn't want the free clothes you gave me today either.
Yeah.
I'm taking the light ones. I'm worried about being over the weight on the suitcase. I'm freaking out about that. I won't sleep tonight. No,
and these are MeUndies, who's a great sponsor of our show. And they brought me some great stuff, and they got abundance of stuff. So I said, you got to try these out. And you don't want to take them because you're scared that they're going to make your suitcase too heavy.
Yeah, I don't like that. I've packed unbelievable to make this trip happen because I've been gone since January 24th, and I'm not a...
December 24th,
Or December 24th. Yeah. And I have shoes. I have things. I have things I can take. I'm not just this guy that shows up and wears other people's clothes and uses other people's shampoo and soap and that. I have a whole cosmetic bag kit.
So you have everything all weighted out, so you know that your bag weighs exactly 50 pounds.
Well, I'm at about probably 48 to 50 pounds. I start adding some underwear and something. I mean, these are pounds.
But how much does underwear weigh? What kind of underwear do you wear? are you a knight in shining armor?
I'm not the type of person that travels and turns his underwear inside out. I brought enough pairs.
You're a nervous traveler.
I am a nervous traveler.
You wear your passport around your neck.
I did that at your party last year. That was my Canadian thing. When you come to Tampa, they all love you. Well, it's like being in Canada. Spitting in a bucket. They come in, and I'm like, hey, I just thought, I'll just wear my passport. I had a big Ziploc bag, and I put it in it and just put a rope around my neck. Not the same one I'm going to use to hang myself when I get back to the cold.
Sounds good, especially now that people know who you are now.
Vancouver.
Exactly, right? And remember the time when you did fall asleep with the Undertaker's match, which we discussed before, and they gave you the chair. Actually, they didn't give you the chair. You were sitting in the front row.
Right.
And so when you sit in the front row at a WWE pay-per-view, they give you
automatically get it,
a pay-per-view
it's
chair.
A nice chair too.
It's part of it. Yeah. And that bothered you as well. You were mad about that.
Yeah. I wanted to leave it, and you said, dude, you can't. People would pay
$1,000 for this.
Right. Right. Something like that. So I didn't want to take it, and then I took it, and I had to pay, $35 to bring it on as extra baggage.
Right.
And I just went, why? But I love it. Now that I have it, it's one of those things. I always hate everything until I have
it. Sometimes you're hard to get along with. You hate a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've heard that.
Yeah.
You're not happy about a lot of stuff, though. You get a free chair that bothered you, or free MeUndies, and that bothered you.
I use the chair, and I'm sure I'll use MeUndies.
Yeah. You will use the MeUndies as well, most likely.
Great product.
So it's your 43rd birthday. You got to spend that here.
Yeah.
here at our place.
It's been a great trip. This has been one of the best trips I've had. Very relaxing. Very nice. The weather's been great. Hanging out by the pool, hating each other until we start drinking.
Maybe that's why the podcast wasn't good the first couple of times, because we weren't drinking.
Yeah, we actually went and did shots.
Hold on a second. I'm actually taking a big. Okay. Yeah. Here, cheers. Dibolja. That's Ukrainian. Dibolja. We're taking
Ukrainian
a drink right
Christmas
now.
Right now.
That's for Ukrainian Christmas. Ukrainians. There's not a lot of Ukrainians in the States. Ukrainians is a real Canadian thing.
I don't know about that. I think that...
Really? Is there? Because I don't hear a lot about Ukrainians. I hear Russians.
When we were kids growing up in Winnipeg...
Everybody was Ukrainian.
Winnipeg, tons of Ukrainians, yeah. But Winnipeg was a real big settlement for that part.
Winnipeg and Yorkton, because that's where cousin Chad is from.
Right.
Also from Yorkton. What's that? He's a good friend of ours, but he's from Yorkton too, and Toho. What's the good word?
Yeah.
He's from Yorkton.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of Ukrainians.
Very Ukrainian compared to what I would have been.
But we all grew up with Ukrainian.
And the Hunky Bill and on TV. The Hunky Bill's pierogi maker.
Now this is where we come from.
You look like the Baron.
All right, we come from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and there's actually a commercial on TV about Hunky Bill's pierogi maker.
Right.
And he would say, the Hunky Bill.
Yeah, I'm Hunky Bill. I make a Hunky Bill. And Hunky is like a bad term. That's like saying a bad thing about a Ukrainian. He would call it, that's the best thing about the Ukrainians.
What does Hunky mean? It's like Honky?
Well, it's like Bull Hunk. And that was the nickname that the Ukrainians had when they came over. It was what's just a as bull bad hunk? As... all the bad names, which I'm not going to ad-lib right now.
Well, yeah, well, we can guess those, please. But what's bullhunk? Bullhunk?
Bullhunk.
What does that mean?
I don't know what it means.
Like a hunk of poop or something?
No, I think it was probably because of the giant heads that we have. Right? I'm positive. It probably is. It was like, you know, all these...
That didn't make any sense. Okay,
Jewish people making fun of big-headed Ukrainians. I just killed Hollywood there.
You're saying that Hunky Bill. I thought that you were getting it mixed up with Honky. Like he goes, I'm Honky Bill. Here's my pierogies. No, Hunky. So Honky is a bad thing.
Right. Oh, Honky, like George Jefferson. Well, yeah, right.
Hey, Honky.
Yeah, right. That's great.
So Winnipeg, a great town to grow up in, but super cold.
Super cold.
We both grew up there. Minus 30, minus 40 would be the average.
Right.
And I think you're 2 years younger than I am.
About a year and a half or something, but
two grades, right? So I remember in the wintertime, there was nothing to do. So we would grab a bottle of alcohol from somebody's parents' house and just walk to 7-Eleven.
The same as today.
Yeah.
Not really anything going on.
Nothing's changed except we actually buy the bottle now. And you'd go to 7-Eleven or McDonald's, because if you walk down Wordsworth Way, at the end of the street, there was a McDonald's and a 7. And we would always, I would meet up at Kevin Ahoff's house. His dad worked for the Liquor Commission.
Oh, God, yeah. He was president. President or something of the Liquor Commission of Manitoba.
So he'd have all these bottles of alcohol with just the name of whatever the spirit was written on a piece of sticker on a typewriter, like vodka.
Right.
So we would grab one of those and walk down and just hang out. You know, minus 30, minus 40, and just walk there and back and drink. What would you guys do? Because we never really hung out. We didn't hang out at that young age.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was the same thing. We would all get together. We had one of our friends, his mother was a divorcee, actually.
Ooh,
which
the
was
hot
really, that was some hot stuff back then. So she was out dating or whatever they do, you know?
Dude, your mom's hot. That's my mom, dude.
Yeah, right. And we would get really crazy, you know. We would. I remember getting Appetite for Destruction had just come out. I think it came out early, and then it came out again or something. Is that right?
No, it wasn't a hit for about a year.
Okay, so we had it before it ever was a hit.
Right.
That's
okay.
For certain.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Winnipeg was always kind of a big rock town.
Right.
You know, we always, like, all the big shows always came.
Always to the
I remember,
the old barn.
Like, Scorpions and Kiss, and everybody came except for Rush and Dio.
Right.
For some reason.
Right.
But you remember the first time we met, though?
Yeah.
It was
Kiss Air Band.
It was Air Band at Sansom Junior High. And I was doing a Wasp Air Band. I want to be somebody.
I want to be somebody.
And you were doing Kiss, Heaven's on Fire. Were you Paul Stanley in that?
I was Paul Stanley in that, and I had a little bit of a dilemma that day because I...
You're wearing a rat shirt. You can tell me about the dilemma in a second, but I remember meeting you in the bathroom. We're both getting ready. I'm putting on my I wasn't even Blackie
First time
Lawless.
We met.
I wasn't even Chris Holmes. I was Randy Piper, the other guitar player in Wasp, and this is some real obscure stuff. So it was the first time I met in the bathroom of Sands, and we're getting ready, and I had my Wasp stuff on, and you came in with a rat shirt.
Right. Let's just also point out that Sansom kids were horrible. These were not your regular, you know, proper rich kids area.
It's kind of like, a get, like ghetto, yeah, almost. Like not a ghetto, but yeah, not a
right,
rich
right.
place.
Like if you did something, if you went up there and you failed, you were just taunted. Ah, Spivak, I thought you would have made it already, but you're still out there in Winnipeg, aren't you, living there? And I don't live there anymore. Okay, so...
So we meet you in the bathroom, and you got your rat shirt, and I was like, dude, you know, you can't wear a rat shirt at a Kiss Air band.
You know what? You had
great advice. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Right.
Okay, so I had great advice.
I looked up to you. It was one of those times, you know, it's happened a couple times.
Do you still look up to me?
Twice, ever. Not right now, no. When I look at you, words like disappointment come into my head, and you know,
for me or for you,
and creep. Yeah. I think those are the things I think.
So you
of.
See me in the bathroom, and you're wearing your rat T-shirt, right. And what happens? Like, why were you wearing a rat T-shirt?
Okay, so I took the shirt off. I'm looking in the mirror, and I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna go shirtless. That was my whole plan. Like the whole night before, I was like, what do I wear? And I thought, you know what? I can't do a Paul Stanley perfectly. I'm a super lazy person. Like I often like to throw stuff out. Even with music, I'll just like, just do it. Like one take, it's done.
Right.
I don't want to piss around with putting too much thought into
Unlike things. Unlike this podcast.
Right, yeah. masturbate, nap, repeat has gotten in the way of many things for me. So I didn't want to get into having to do like, you know, it was obviously animalized her, no makeup, but still I didn't even have a wig. I didn't have the long hair. I had a short hair. I was a bagger at Safeway basically on stage with a rat T-shirt. I had the shirt off. I looked in the mirror and I had this acne. I used to get this acne all over my back and shoulders. The true story, I played basketball in freshman and that, and people would just stand in the stands and they would see my acne and they would point and laugh. Like, this is an awful school. They'd be like, zit back instead of Spivak, zit back. And Grant Johnson, he would yell at me. Big Grant Johnson always reminded me of Moose from Archie Comics, right?
Hey, Spivak.
Yeah, right. Great guy, sweetheart of a guy, but just, you know, yeah, big mother
In case
effer.
He's listening. If, yeah. if you're listening, Grant, we love you. Yeah, okay, now just bury him.
And we love the Ukrainians. We really yes, love Ukrainians.
Yeah. And we love rats. We're big rat fans.
Big rat fans.
So Grant Johnson, so, big, dumb
yeah,
idiot.
Yeah, so I'd be playing hoops, and Johnson, and I had very skinny legs. I was like 165 pounds and still 6 feet tall, 6'2". And my legs, I'm all legs. Like, look at me right now. I'm gorgeous. I should get these things insured. But this was bad. These were skinny legs.
Right.
And he would go, crazy legs, and just point at me. I'd be shooting a foul shot. You know how nervous that is? And it's Westwood Warriors.
Yeah.
This place was packed, right? This is legendary basketball.
Sure.
And I'm in, and my legs are wobbling. And he's like, do crazy legs. He'd yell at me, you know, because I used to joke around with him. And I made everybody make fun of me. I always did. I said, look at my legs. Look what I can do with them. I'm crazy legs. Now make fun of me when I play basketball, please. Cuckold me. I'm 9 years old. I need to be cuckolded. So, anyway, back to the rat T-shirt.
Which Lon just told us what that meant.
Yeah.
Google it if you don't know.
Lon's half Lon's salary goes to it. Just kidding there, buddy. Keep up the
we
good
love
work.
You too, Lon, yeah, if you're a friend. You too, yeah. And Ukrainians, yeah. Auntie Elsie, but shout out to you. Yeah. We love you too.
Yeah. Okay. So I had acne. So I decided to wear the rat shirt because I thought the entire crowd would chant zit back. Because I'm looking with the shirt off, and I was beautiful. Upper body, beautiful.
Right.
Lower body,
Well, but you know, skinny, but it's okay. No one cared about
legs
back then.
I could have done the skinny jeans thing that all the kids are doing.
Pretty much back then. You wore tight jeans back then, but it was okay if you had a big upper body. It was an upper body business back then. The speewee. So that's why you wore the rat shirt, because you were scared that you would have a zit back chant.
Yeah,
you
right.
Zit back. Okay.
Instead, so I wear the rat shirt, and you know, I'm in grade 7. This school goes.
I'm in grade 9.
Grade 7 to grade 9.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm still 1985. I'm a kid, and you guys were scary. You know, you really were. Everybody, this is true. Like, people were walking around with leather gloves, studded gloves, tree cone studs, the three levels.
Yeah,
the
like the
stuff.
Spike studs.
Rob Halford shit.
Rob Chalk wore them, and Bill Parasites wore them. And like Rob, what was the guy who played guitar? Garth Kwasnitsa. What was the guy who was in Nothing Pretty? Rob something or other.
Yeah.
All those guys wore like big studs. Like, our school is a total metal school.
Right. Nunchucks, three-quarter staffs, rumbos against hedges. People would meet in the field across from each other, and they'd have these
cool.
Like,
someone carried a three-quarter staff to school?
And nunchucks. I have nunchucks.
I know you have nunchucks. You're actually really good at nunchucks.
I'm really good at
nunchucks. Like, that's not even a joke. How'd you get good at nunchucks?
I needed to meet girls.
Would you practice in front of a mirror?
A friend of mine, you probably know, John Wangle, He made them. Okay, this will get him busted. Nice guy.
We love Wangle.
The RCMP. Right. He didn't actually make illegal weapons.
Oh, so he made them.
So he made them for me, and I used to wear a bucket on my head while I practiced them. And then this guy I know, I told him, and he nicknamed me Buckethead, and he was chanting Buckethead all the time at me. It was embarrassing.
And now that bastard who used to be in Guns N' Roses stole that gimmick too.
Right. But with the rat shirt on, people did stand up and laugh and point at me. And it was
awful. Really?
So that's the way my airband went down.
So you went on stage for the airband.
Look, nothing like Paul Stanley. Wearing a rat shirt. Levi 501s.
You know, the real tight ones.
Yeah.
That's what Paul Stanley was.
And boat shoes.
So they were actually laughing at you.
Yeah, it was awful. It was really bad.
You should listen to me, man. As you see? You know, we went up there and you know what happened, dude? We played the Wasp air band and we got to go on Switchback with Lori Mustard.
Oh, that...
So we got on TV with our air band.
Yeah.
If you would have listened, you could have got on too.
Yeah, I was already worried when I signed up for the air band that I might be on Switchback, and I had like diarrhea for a week. I couldn't even imagine having to go on that show. Even this is killing me right now. This is the most artificial thing that I've ever done in my life. I swear. If it wasn't to benefit the Ukrainians that were stranded on the island of Yaborsky. They have Schmengskis
and drinking borscht.
Yeah.
To finish off, it was your 43rd birthday yesterday. Mm. You had a great day. A lot of people on Facebook commented. You beat last year's record.
I did. I count Facebook them. Birthdays. I'm insane. Yeah, okay. It's true. I do count them. And I got up to about, I don't know, in between 95 and 97 or 8. I haven't really done the final count.
What did you get last year?
Probably about 75,
wow,
which was a big thing.
Okay, so you got more this year than last year.
I've been actually sending texts to my buddy Tyler going, 83, 86, 88, and he still doesn't get it. He's like, why do you keep giving me numbers?
Just keep wishing me happy birthday.
But I think he'll figure it out.
So. Okay, so it was a great day. You got.
He's also a nuts.
And we love Tyler too. Yeah. I'm sure he'll be listening. Yeah. We got over 95 happy birthday views.
Mm-hmm.
You get to have a nice dinner last night, and you got to meet Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, two Rock and Roll Hall of Famers yesterday. I mean, that's
right.
Pretty cool, right?
It was very cool. Like when we walked into the restaurant, and Paul
Rock and
Gene
Bruce.
Were sitting there with the other owners of the business, and we come up, and Paul was super cool. He was really sweet and nice, and he had his big hands. He's a big-handed
musician
man.
Hands.
Yeah.
He looks good too, though, man.
He looks great. He really does.
I remember commenting him on his hair. I said, "Oh, he cut your bangs. It looks good." And he was like, "Huh?" And then he flicked his hair back, but he was like, "I don't think guys don't compliment other guys in their hair, but we compliment each other with our hair." You finally get to meet Gene Simmons. which was great because mm-hmm. Gene wanted, actually some fan wanted to take a picture of me and Gene and her.
Funny, that fan is a friend of ours from Hollywood, actually. A friend of that you and I know, Rika. That's her friend. That's
right.
So
that,
these
friend.
Texts
yeah.
are coming in later and I didn't realize that. But anyway, Gene says to her, he goes something like, "You're my daughter and I'm
Would
your
you
daddy.
Like
this
picture?
Is your uncle," he says. And then he gives us all a group hug together and squeezes us. And then I look at Gene, and I'm thinking, "Oh, he's pretty cool." And I'm smiling and looking at him, and I'm not, you know.
You're not really. I mean, you weren't really intimidated, or were you intimidated?
No, not at all. No. With Paul, I was when I first sat down because it was kind of like you guys were
just you and me
across the table, and I have a hard time hearing anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do I even engage in a conversation? I didn't want to be lawn. Nothing against him. Great guy. Runs a car dealership. Wonderful person.
Great ex-great
people,
Panini
good
owner.
People. Great guy. And with Gene, I was smiling. I was like, you know what? And he's looking at me, and you can tell we're like, this is cut from the same cloth, me and Gene Simmons.
Right, of course.
He wouldn't be as picky on a radio.
He wouldn't. It wouldn't have to start over three times.
I say to him, and all the confidence in the world, I said, "It's my birthday today." I look at him.
And he looks at you and gets this really cheesy smile and goes, "It's your birthday? I don't give a shit."
Exactly. And then says, "Just kidding," and steps one step. Puts out his tongue, and I open my mouth.
He grabs the back of your head.
Yeah, grabs the back of my head. I open my mouth. He sticks his tongue in. It goes in half an inch, maybe even an inch. I'm letting this happen.
Just the tip.
Right, because I'm okay with that. Don't judge me. I'm into the tongue and the mouth, no matter whose it is.
Guy or girl.
Exactly.
Especially Gene Simmons.
Especially Gene Simmons.
It's a hell of a tongue.
Right, so then I let it go to where I could almost feel it in there, and then I backed off, right, and gave the old, like I just smelled a fart kind of, you know, thing. But he seemed to do the same thing, but he won. He won that part.
He kind of won, but then I think overall it was a good experience, and the best of all, too, was when you took another picture, and Paul Stanley, you said, "It's my birthday," and Paul said, "That's an impressive-looking beard for an 18-year-old.
Right, yeah. He's got great...
You had Paul and Gene giving you kind of like verbal, like, yeah, hey, man, we think you're cool. So
it was fun. We took some good pictures.
And I still don't. But hey, it's good to have you.
That's okay.
It's good to see you.
You looked good, though. You looked really good that day, like yesterday, on birthday day. It seemed like it was kind of a weird thing because it was more like your birthday. You got a lot of attention there.
I did,
A lot of the nice things, you know. I sat there by myself a lot. There was some army vets. I'd wave at them occasionally. They thought I was somebody. They were too old to know that I wasn't, right? So I'm just a regular guy, nobody special.
Final thing. What happens when you Google the name Spewy? You did this once.
Oh, yeah. I do this every day. What do you mean, once? Are you kidding me? I have fruit flies that I name at home now. I'm completely nuts. I Googled the name Spewy and lots of stuff that you and I come up, but there's one in particular that comes up always in the top five, always. And it says, who is this guy named Spewy that Chris Jericho tweets so much about? And the answer is, nobody special, just a regular guy. Los Angeles, I think. That's the only thing cool about it. It's like, oh, I live in LA, just regular person.
There you go, know? Guys.
At least I got good weather. By the way, I go home tomorrow to like tundra freezing cold.
Thank God for that. Yeah. Spewy, ladies and gentlemen, he's a regular guy and nobody special.
Ran his course.
All right, thanks to my best friend, Spewy. He's quite a character. Did you like him? Hit me up at TalkIsJericho and let me know. Maybe I'll have him on more. It's up to you. He's at Spewy on the Twitter. Help him get more likes, more followers. He got over 100 Facebook happy birthdays. Maybe reach out and wish him happy birthday as well. Belated birthday, better than nothing. He's at Instagram, at Spewy again. Also talking about again, I got the most iconic figure in wrestling history. I got the immortal Hulk Hogan. Part 2 is today. He's got plenty of stories about WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 3, Andre the Giant, and he explains how he really ended up out in the ring with Stone Cold and The Rock for the start of last year's WrestleMania 30. We'll talk about the Hulkster helmet. Remember that? That's obscure. We'll talk about his relationship with Macho Man Randy Savage. He even talks about his last conversation with the Ultimate Warrior, which took place at WrestleMania last year. It's heartwarming. It will bring a tear to your eye. Another whole hour with the Hulkster is coming up. People are saying this is the best Hulk Hogan interview they've ever heard. It's a whole new side of the Hulkster, and I'm so excited for you to hear part 2. Also excited for the great debate. Pritchard versus Bischoff debating the Monday Night Wars with yours truly, Y2J, as the moderator. You can still get your tickets at rfvideo.com. I will be moderating the open forum debate January 25th in Philadelphia at Dave and Buster's on Columbus Avenue. It starts at 1 p.m., so you can come check out this monumental first time ever debate. Still make it to the Royal Rumble afterwards, or watch the Royal Rumble afterwards if you already have your tickets for that. Plus, if you come early at 10 a.m. there's a special VIP meet and greet with me, Y2J, with Eric Bischoff, with Bruce Pritchard. This is the place to be in Philadelphia in January 25th. Dave and Buster's on Columbus Avenue starts at 10. The great debate starts at 1. Get your tickets now at rfvideo.com. I'm telling you, it's going to be one for the ages. It's going to be a night you'll never ever forget. And before we go any further, before we get to Hulk Hogan, I want to thank you guys. A big thank you for listening to this show and for doing your online shopping through my Amazon links. It's the easiest way to support Talk is Jericho. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. It's the easiest way to support the show because every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. Hulk Hogan t-shirts and movies, a copy of his book My Life Outside the Ring. You get the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War, with the title track Do You Want to Start a War, hitting radio stations all across the nation already. We've got dozens of ads for this great track before Christmas, and we've got a dozen more after Christmas. It's going to be a second hit from this record, Do You Want to Start a War. New book my third New York Times bestseller, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. You could pick that up as well. I just saw the cover for the paperback version that comes out next October. So much cool things. Listen, you buy whatever you want, whatever you need. My son Ash today, Ash the Fish Expert, was just buying a bunch of Star Wars dolls today. He went through the Amazon link. You can get whatever you want. And the truth about using my Amazon links is this. You can buy whatever you want to. Won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to be doing some online shopping, do it through my Amazon links. Help out this show in the process. You go to podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. You bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right. Y2J WWE Winter Tour starts tomorrow night in Montgomery, Alabama. Listen, I'm doing a select handful of dates, and they're the only ones I'm doing. No TVs, no pay-per-views, only house shows, only live events. This is the last chance you'll get to see me in the ring for a while. I will not be back in the WWE for I have no idea exactly when I'll be back. The dates are as follows: tomorrow night in Montgomery, Sunday in Mobile, Alabama, 16 St. Louis, January 17 Las Vegas, where after the show you can come to Body English at the Hard Rock. You can come check me out. I'll be hosting an after show party at Body English in Las Vegas at the Hard Rock Casino. Come on down and check that out in January 17th. 18th, I'll be in Houston with the WWE. 23, Trenton, New Jersey. 24, East Rutherford. 25, of course, is the Great Debate in Philly. January 31st, Edmonton. February 1st, Calgary. I got the 7th in Jacksonville, 8 in Canton, Ohio, 14 in Tampa, Florida. Come bring your honey for Valentine's Day. 15, Fort Myers. 27th, MSG in New York City. 28th in Toronto. And March 1st in Buffalo, New York. Those are the last dates that you'll see me playing, see me performing, see me wrestling in the WWE for a while. So come on down, hang out with me. And also, if you live in the Europe, UK, Ireland, Cinderblock Party World Tour continues 2015 with the Dirty Youth. March 4th in Belfast, 5 Cork, 6 Dublin, 7 Nottingham, 8 Wolverhampton, 9 Manchester, 10 Glasgow, Scotland, 11 London, 12 Bristol, 13 Exeter, 14 Southampton, 15 Brighton. Then we head over to mainland Europe, 17 Paris, 18 Pretellen, Switzerland, 19 Munich, Germany, 20 Mannheim, 21st Bochum. All ticket information and VIP packages available at FozzyRock.com. If you love Fozzy, if you haven't heard us yet, if you have heard us yet, this is going to be a monumental tour. I can't wait for you guys to come see it. All right, part two with Hulk Hogan.
Talk is Hawkins. Talk is Jericho.
All right, sitting here with Hulk Hogan. Now, Hulk, when you first came into the WWF, were you wrestling mostly in the Northeast, or when you came in, is that when they went national?
It was pretty quick because the first thing we did was go into Vern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
like I said, one month was AWA, the next month is WWF.
No, we made some quick moves because Vince had some major stroke and I had some stroke. And a lot of the boys were my friends, you know. Mm-hmm. So I could call guys up and go, hey, brother.
Because a lot of that crew went with you.
Yeah, man. I pulled Mean Gene right away. I pulled Heenan with me. I pulled David Schultz, who Vince Sr. loved.
Mm-hmm.
Vince Sr. loved Dr. D. David Schultz. And David just was an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have still been there working, you know, like the guys that are still there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just was one of those things that, you know, I just, you know, calling everybody, you know, they got a hold of Jimmy and Macho and everything. They all came in, you know.
How closely did you work with Vince at that point in time?
We lived down the street from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was in Greenwich and I was in Stamford. You know, we had the whole training thing going and the Harley riding thing going. And I was in the office most of the time with him, you know, and then I'd haul ass to LaGuardia or, you know.
Make the towns.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was a lot of time. I mean, I'd leave in the morning and tell my wife, Linda, I'll be home in a couple hours. You know, 12 hours later, I'd still be at the office with Vince. You know?
Hanging out, yeah. Going over stuff. Was there somebody else there, too? Was there, like, some booking? Like
Patterson was kind of, like, there, but Patterson was, I give up. You and Vince, figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You go talk to him.
That's how it used to be.
He's still like that.
Yeah, yeah, but, I mean, you know, Patterson, at the time, was Vince Sr.'s guy. Mm-hmm. And Vince's guy, too. But because me and Vince were really clicking, Pat would step out because of the Hulkamania, working the gimmick, and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, so Pat, you know, gracefully let me find my way, you know. And when I leave, I don't know what was said, but, you know, Pat was always there and very supportive. I've been friends with Pat forever.
Very smart, too. Yeah. I learned everything I knew from Vince and Pat, more specifically how to put together a match. You know, that was still the genius for me. The Jedi.
And Barnett was there, too.
Now, what's the Barnett story?
Oh, the Barnett story.
Let's bring it up now.
Okay.
We'll go back to Vince. We're all over the place, but I got it. I'm under control.
That's okay. The Barnett story was, he was always in the office, and whenever he'd see me, instead of calling me Hulk Hogan, "Oh my God, Sterling, you're just amazing. I can't believe you still have all your hair." I said, "Jim, that's because you're not tall enough to see the top of my head." "Oh my God, Sterling." So me and Vince would be in the office. I said, "Vince, follow me down the hall and hide outside Barnett's door, you know?" So I'd come, "Hey, Jimsy, what's up, brother?" "Oh my God," flipping the tie, "just another day at the office." "Jim, you know what? This fucking Vince. I'm so tired of Vince's crap. If we could just get rid of Vince, you and I could rule the world, Jim, with this Hulkamania thing and your genius and "Oh my God, that Vince, he's such a pain in my ass. Oh, Vince." And then Vince would come around the corner. "Oh, fuck you, Hogan. You're such an ass. Can I cuss on this thing?"
Yeah.
"You're such an asshole, Hogan. I'll never trust you again, Hogan." I'd do it a week later. He'd fall for it again. And I'd have Vince hide outside the door. But Barnett was so much fun to screw with. Me and Vince used to die laughing, you know. And we'd just screw with him all the time. He was so easy.
But he was part of the inner circle at that point.
Oh, yeah. Jimsy was cool, man. Yeah. Jim was really. And he had stroke, bro.
He
was a trip, man. I had no idea until I started working with
Australia,
him.
Australia, Hawaii, all to the south. Yeah. He was a big temple for a while. Tell us about the concept of the first WrestleMania. And I know it was a huge gamble, or at least, like I said, from Wrestling War, about how the future of the company was riding on this one show. It was either going to make it or break it, literally.
Yeah, this is the point where, you know, I just couldn't see the forest.
Through the trees?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Through the trees. It was the point where this is all Vince, you know, and I was real good at being Hulk Hogan, real good at selling out buildings and tearing the shirts, and I was real good at, even if I beat somebody, I figured out how to make them better after doing the job than mm-hmm. they were before they wrestled me, so I could wrestle them again and again and again. And, you know, even like with Vern, I used to get a ton of heat because I said, "Vern, let me put this guy over. I can draw my money." "Oh, you don't have to do that. You can draw money with him anyway." And I said, "I'm getting so much heat from the guys," but that's the way Vern was. That's the way Vince was. You know, it was like for the first 3-4 years, you know, you got to stay strong.
You never lost, basically, right?
No, and it just was getting to the point where, man, if I could just have somebody put their foot on the rope, even if I can't do it clean in the middle, just put their foot on the rope, the place would sell out the next time. Oh, it's going to sell out anyway. And Vince was right.
Mm-hmm.
He really was. He was more worried about the merchandise and the toys and all that stuff because when I first went up there selling T-shirts, they didn't have any merchandise. They weren't even selling merchandise. And when I asked about playing music in the garden, "No, we're not playing music."
You mean entrance music?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I want to play the Eye of the Tiger.
Wow.
And, you know, so back then that
they never had anybody.
No.
They never had any music.
No.
Wow.
So, you know, when this WrestleMania 1 came along, I was real good at the whole Hogan thing, but I didn't see this vision Vince saw.
Mm-hmm.
So when they say, "Oh, it was Hogan and Vince that both helped," no, bro, it was Vince.
Because
I didn't get it, man. I didn't know where he was going. I didn't know he was rolling the dice like that.
As far as putting the whole company's fortune on the line.
No, I didn't. And even in the middle of it, I didn't realize, you know.
What was the relationship with Cyndi Lauper, I guess to an extent, to Mr. T, is that what took it over the top at that point in time? Because, you know, now it's funny to think, "Oh, Cyndi Lauper, Mr. T." But at the time, Cyndi Lauper was like Taylor Swift, and Mr. T was like the biggest action hero we can think of, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of like another foggy thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because Lou Albano did the video, mm-hmm. you know?
With Cyndi, yeah, Girls.
And that was like a one-off thing. He went and did that. And I'm like, wow, how did that happen? I'd have been fired for doing that.
You were.
Yeah.
Doing the Hogan,
yeah, for doing something like that. Yeah. But, you know, fast forward 3 or 4 years later, Lou Albano does that. And all of a sudden, I'm working out at the gym in Stanford, and Dave Wolf walks in, Cyndi Lauper's boyfriend. We start talking, and I recognize him. He goes, "Yeah, man, I'd love to get into wrestling. I'd love to wrestle that manager, Lou Albano." I'm like, "I don't think so." And then I told Vince, I said, "Vince, I think we got one on the hook here. Cyndi Lauper's boyfriend wants to do something in wrestling with Albano." And apparently he must have been around Albano on the video shoot because he was Cyndi Lauper's manager and figured out Lou was a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he shouldn't be afraid of wrestlers like I used to be. And maybe there's something there. I said, "Man," I said, "Vince, I think this whole thing might work." So it's kind of foggy, but that's kind of like my memory of talking to Vince about the manager and how he hooked Cyndi and got the whole thing going. I don't have a clue.
But that put a lot of focus onto, you know, the WWE, like we mentioned, or sorry, WWF, and that meant, like we mentioned, being on Saturday Night Live. And I remember so much MTV focus on Cyndi Lauper's involved with this, and she's going to be at WrestleMania, and it was such a big deal
right
at the time.
Yeah, but I mean, that was all Vince. I mean, I just don't remember how he put those pieces together. But I said, here's the lead, and this is what I know. And
What do you remember about that night, about the first WrestleMania?
Oh, my God.
Was it a pressure-filled night?
Yeah, it was a tough night because it was, you know, first off, Mr. T started getting sketchy, you know.
As far as?
Well, if you rewind back, Orndorff and Piper did not want an actor in the ring. Piper was, you know, trying to maintain this tough guy image, you know, toughest guy in the world, yeah. And Orndorff was just a redneck, you know. And they didn't want this actor. You know, and I knew Mr. T was cool and knew his agent, my agent.
You always understood the show business aspect of wrestling, too.
And that whole
character.
Yeah, and so Vince, you know, was worried about them hurting Mr. T and hurting him bad. And I said, guys, you know, we need to get through this. And, you know, and so it was a constant struggle. Why should we sell for him? Why should we do this? I said, you know, I just didn't, you know, it was that was the tough part. So Mr. T, even though we worked out with him a couple times, he was an amateur wrestler in high school, so he knew the fireman's carry and the takedowns and single leg and going behind. And so he had the mechanics, you know. And I said, don't think about wrestling. Think about this as like you're doing the A-team. You're acting.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the apron, don't think of get all excited about wrestling. Just think that we're acting. We're all friends and trying to get him to calm down. So the workouts weren't that great, but I did what I really never wanted to do was actually plan a match out from A to the Z with him, you know. And as we're getting closer to this thing, I'm staying, you know, in Stanford, and Mr. T's staying at the Helmsley Palace in New York, this high-end restaurant. I went to eat dinner with him. They wouldn't even let me in the place where they didn't have a suit and tie on.
A tie and a do-rag.
Yeah, whatever. And I didn't have the tie. But I don't think I was wearing a do-rag back then. I still had a little hair left.
Still some hair there.
But anyway, make a long story short, Three days before the WrestleMania, he disappears. I said, Peter Young, my agent, Mr. T's eight, where's T at? Oh, he's all stressed out. He'll be back. I said, okay, let's talk in the morning. Where's Mr. T at? Oh, he's sleeping in the park with some homeless people. I said, where in the park? Oh, he told me not to tell anybody. This is what Peter Young's telling me. So all of a sudden, you know, we had a couple things happen the night before. We had some appearances. There were, Richard Belzer said there were 50 kids in wheelchairs waiting for us. So I told Peter that. I said, you tell Mr. T, I'm going to go see 50 kids in wheelchairs at the Richard Belzer show. So all of a sudden, T shows up. We go there. I have that little blow off with Richard Belzer. It didn't turn out too well.
Yeah. Cost you some money.
Yeah, I did. And so we go back to the hotel room. Mr. T's in a great mood. I told him you're the champion of the world. I told him not to mess you. You're the world's champion. Okay, T. See you in the morning. So anyway, I go to the garden early, like supposed to. And here we go, man. It's 4, 5, 6 o'clock. No T. All of a sudden, 7 o'clock. Match is supposed to start at 7:30. All of a sudden, Vince comes blowing in the room I'm in. He goes, Mr. T's getting ready to leave. I said, what? They said, yeah, you know where you come up that round thing in the garden? He was at the first stop, and he must have brought 20 or 30 people with him, you know, and he's leaving. I said, Vince goes, you got to go down there. I said, don't worry, I got it. I went down there. They won't let me in. They won't let my friends in. He had an entourage with him. I said, everybody gets in. No problem. Must go. So, you know, because if he had backed out of the garden, I don't know where he would have went. I'd have never found him. It had been over.
And the garden is stiff to get into, too, so you can totally see that happening. Yeah.
And so they blocked him, and I got everybody in. You know, Vince, however Vince did it, he took care of everybody. I got Mr. T in that room. I wouldn't let him out of my eyes, you know, until it was time to go to the ring. And we went to the ring, and if you ever watched the match, as soon as he fired and carried Piper, he was totally blown sky high. Totally blown. We got through the match. At the end of the match, we went to raise our hands. He couldn't even raise his hand. He was like, but we got through it. But that was the big thing about that WrestleMania 1 was T was trying to backpedal on us.
Trying to get out.
And he came to the building, but then something scared him off. He's just looking for an excuse to get out of there.
And don't think that it might not have been nerves, too, because think about that. I mean, I've seen that a few times when sports guys get involved or actors. You act. You're in front of your crew, and you take one and take two. Yeah. Be in front of 20,000 people, man.
I almost did that today with you.
Yeah, I was ran away.
I got nervous. I was going to drive home.
It's just me. I was going to follow you. I had you staked out, man. Poor Jimmy was waiting in the rain for me with his umbrella. I got here early, so I was sitting in the car hanging around. He was standing out there waiting for me.
He's got the double freezing shine on. Look,
yes, man. So was there kind of some maybe the next day or over the next week, kind of waiting to see like what's the buy rate? What are the numbers? You know, how do we do? Because that like I said, Vince was saying like this is make or break. If we don't make money on this, the company's done. Did you have any input in that or any knowledge of that? Or
well, the next day we had a couple glitches. You know, it was all closed circuit.
Yes, old school.
You know, so all of a sudden, Philadelphia, the signal shut down for 20 minutes. Almost had a riot, and Nassau Coliseum, it was down for 2 seconds.
And let's explain quickly. Closed circuit, which probably hardly anybody knows except for old guys like us, is you would go buy a ticket to the arena, and then you would sit in the arena and watch the big screens that were put up, kind of like archaic pay-per-view, but it wasn't at your house. It was at the arena. So that's
like going to a movie theater, but you're in
you're in an arena.
Yeah, a big arena with a big screen. Yeah.
Right.
So the pay-per-views or whatever it was, not pay-per-views, but the closed circuit, there are a few glitches here and there. But, you know, the overall theme was huge success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, huge, huge success. And then, you know, we got through WrestleMania 1, then we were on fire with Muhammad Ali being the guest referee and Mr. T and Cyndi Lauper and Liberace and the Rockettes and Mary Hart and Billy Martin, the manager from the Yankees. And just, I mean, we were off and running then.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm telling you, bro, everything was sold out day and night. It was. I mean, I hit Philadelphia Spectrum at 1 o'clock, sold out. The Garden that night, sold out. The next day, Boston Gardens at 1 o'clock, sold out. That night, LA Forum, sold out. And it was like that everywhere. Even house shows, Brantford, Ontario, sold out. Maple Leaf Garden sold out. C&E Center, I think there's going to be 7,000 people. 74,000 people.
That was crazy, yeah.
It was insane. And it was like, you know, my biggest thing was, hey, brother, big boot room service, can't miss room service, you know. I got to the point where, hey, man, they're already in the building. Let's get the heat. Let me Hulk up. Let's go beat.
Because you would go on before intermission a lot of times.
Sometimes if I had to do 2-a-days.
Gotcha.
You know, sometimes it just put me on intermission because I was just burnt because – there were no Stone Cold. There was no Chris Jericho. There was no Triple H. There was no Rock. It was just
you.
Me.
Yeah.
For like the first 15 years. Or not that. Maybe first 10 years.
For a while, a long time.
Yeah.
I think the thing that you were great at, too, was you were always really good working the crowd. I mean, with the hand to the ear. And that was just part of the Hulkster's personality. Did that organically evolve over time? Or right off the bat, did you know, okay, I'm going to work the crowd?
Well, I started figuring out in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
But I also figured out that if you got hurt, you didn't make any money.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a couple times I jumped off the top rope. Blassie had me in Japan doing knee drops off the top rope with no knee pads. My good God, my knee's already blown. I've been over here a week and my knee's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old school thought from Matt Sydal was real wrestlers don't wear knee pads.
Wow.
That was where I came from.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
Fred Blassie goes, same thing. Real wrestlers don't wear knee pads. So, hey, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but. You know, I didn't know any better. I just listened to what I was being told. And what was I talking about?
Well, we're just talking about you working on the Hulkamania after show.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, you know, I'd go to Japan and wrestle, how they taught me in Florida, you know, and have fun over there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd come back here and I'd have to work a totally different gimmick. You know, because when you would go over to New Japan, I mean, the first time I went to New Japan in 77 or 78, I looked out of the curtains at the opening match. I got sick. I went, oh my God.
You know, nervous?
Yeah. Mm. And the first guy I had was Riki Choshu,
who
was having his first match after getting a gold medal in the Olympics. And I was fourth on the card, and I asked Blassie, what should I do? He goes, just go beat him up. I went, what? He goes, yeah, just go beat him up. I go, are you serious? He goes, yeah. You think you're not wrestling? I went, no. He goes, then go beat him up. I went, okay.
Good point.
You know, I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was scared to death, you know. So I found out after wrestling so many years, you know, and then figuring out the Hulk gimmick, that if I wanted to make money night after night after night after night after night, and whether it was wrestling five times a week or 10 times a week or flying 300 days a year or whatever it was, I said, you better figure this out, how to keep your feet on the ground. Because mm-hmm. if you don't, Jesse Ventura will take your place. Orndorff scratching for the belt.
Piper, if he would have
done a job, I'd have loved to switch the belt with him 100 times like I did Macho, but he wouldn't do a job.
I couldn't
trust him. Hmm. And I told Piper a month ago, I said, can you imagine how much money you would have made with me if you had just done a job, Piper? And then as soon as you'd done that, I said, hey, Vince, he's cool. Now I could have dropped the belt to you.
And what was the mentality of not wanting to do the job?
I don't get it. It was that he worked himself into a shoot. He actually thought he was a tough guy. So Piper, it's a work. And I tease him now. I text him every day. I can show you the text I sent every day. I text him every day, all these spiritual messages. But I tease Piper, too. I said, can you imagine the millions and millions of dollars he's made if he'd have just done one job for me?
Just one, yeah.
Dude, I'd have flipped that belt to you four or five times when I was doing those low-budget movies.
Yeah. You even told the story last time I saw you. You used to have that helmet, the Hulkster helmet, with a big fist on the top of it.
Yeah, because Bad News Allen wouldn't do a job for me.
So you got the helmet made so you would have a reason to hit them for a DQ or something?
Yeah. So now will you go down? Bad news if I hit you in the head with this helmet or run across the ring and headbutt you with it?
Hogan's trying to double cross me, man.
Yeah. But it was crazy, man.
Wow. And that's kind of how it was back in those times and back in those days, you know? It was such a real, like you said, no trust. They're going to try and outsmart me, outwork me.
Well, and back in the day, it was different, too, because if I went to the Spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And Gurria or Strongbow or somebody gave me a finish and it was a little kabukiish. I called Vince at home. I said, hey, brother, you know, what are we doing here next month?
Mm-hmm.
Let's work backwards. I don't mind doing this, but I need to know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we were on the phone. It was actually me and Vince on the phone whenever there's an issue. And then it comes down, okay, do whatever you think's best. I'm like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Make sure everybody's taken care of. Let's just do this. It was different back then, bro. It wasn't like it is now.
I remember even when you came back, I think in 2002 or so, and you were working with like guys like myself and maybe Angle a little bit, but I remember working with you for about 5 or 6 months. And I remember about a month afterwards, you're like, I can't believe how easy this is now. It's like you guys want to work, and we're working together. You said it was never like this before.
No.
And I was like, how do you mean? You're like, guys would never allow me to do anything.
Yeah, well, you know? you were my favorite to work with.
Yeah, we had a great, great time.
Because I knew the matches were going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you were an entertainer, and I wasn't going to get hurt,
mm-hmm.
you know. And yeah. I had a bad experience with Kurt Angle, you know, because me and Kurt Angle went out there, and man, it was like...
Oh, you suplexed yourself.
No, it wasn't even that. It was like first two or three times, I said, bro, I said, man, what's your deal? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I didn't know, but then we get to TNA, he goes, oh, Vince told me to do that to you for the first 5 minutes.
I'm sure like, he did.
Thanks, Vince, sure. You know, standard sure. Vince rib, you know. You know?
But things were different back in those times, you know. I mean, speaking of someone... You mentioned that you'd worked with him earlier when you kind of were in the early days of Senior working with Andre.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, still one of the biggest WrestleManias of all time, 3, and your match being the angle that drew so many people. Andre wasn't quite as agile as he was back in the days, but he still was Andre the Giant. I mean, how was that whole feud working with him, and was he into it? Was he cool with it? And how was he?
Well, you know, there were like two Andres, the early Andre and the old Andre.
Mm-hmm.
The early Andre was full of piss and vinegar,
mm-hmm.
who hated anybody 6'9", 10, 11, such as Big John Studd. You know, because he thought John Studd was trying to be the Giant. I thought I was going to be as big as Andre someday, you know.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know if he's jealous or keeping a spot or teaching everybody a lesson or whatever it was, but I know the first 7 or 8 years with Andre, it was tough. I mean, it was brutal. And the worst, I mean, you know, just like he hated Randy. No baby oil. The only reason Randy's alive is because of Miss Elizabeth.
Wow.
But when he wrestled Randy, no baby oil. Because, you know, Andre didn't want to get that on him. He just hit the water, rinse off, and go to the bar. He didn't want baby all over him. So, I mean, back in the day, you know, working with Andre, you know, I just remember. And now I get it. Because all of a sudden, if you're a single guy and you meet a flight attendant and you put him at ringside and you go out to wrestle Andre the Giant or Chris Jericho, you're probably going to be more aggressive and more stiff because you got a girl out there, right? I just remember from him beating me up and just abusing me in the ring when he didn't like me, the thing that taught me the most, biggest lesson of all is I brought an Eastern Airlines flight attendant to the Capitol Center and just gorgeous, cute little blonde, before I was married, of course.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And she's sitting at ringside, and I just remember he picked me up by those yellow trunks like a stork, you know? And my butt crack, he T-balled me with a butt crack, and he carried me around like I was a baby, stuck my neck on the bottom rope and tied my bottom hit my head in the bottom two ropes and took this big foot and was just yoking the rope up.
Yeah.
And if you have any idea how stiff that was in those old school rings that weren't all the same everywhere, it was one of those old school boxing rings in the Capitol Center that he yoked, but it wouldn't have four ropes, it only had three ropes. There was a 22-foot ring in the Capitol Center as hard as a rock.
Mm-hmm.
But the ropes were stiff like wires, and he yoked my neck up, and then he just used that foot, and he just violently shook the ropes with his foot and goes, "No more girlfriends! No girlfriends!" Okay, I get it. I thought he broke my neck, you know. But I got past that phase, and then the whole thing went, you know, in Japan, it got crazy. And I think from this point on, we became friends. Vince was over there taking over for his dad, and he decided to change the game. And from everything I understand, the booking fee changed from what Vince Sr. required to what Vince required. And I just happened to remember that I was, you know, running hard with Adrian Adonis at the time in Tokyo. And Vince called me. He goes, "Well, you have a title match tonight. You against Fujinami," which Fujinami is a great guy.
Yeah.
But he was also Carl Gotch's boy.
Yeah, shooter.
You know, great guy. So, you know.
Yeah.
And he goes, "I told him you're not coming back tonight." I mean, I told him you're not ever coming back to Japan because we couldn't cut a deal. And the title's on the line tonight. You're on TV. Do not lose the belt.
This is the WWF title?
Yes.
So you guys went over there kind of as a joint show or something like
that? No, we went over because I was booked over there, and Vince just happened to come with me because he wanted to talk to Sakaguchi and Oki.
So you're working for
and
New
renegotiate.
Japan.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Renegotiate, but just happened to be.
I hear you. But you're the WWF champion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm on TV, right. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like, okay.
Red light fever.
Everything's cool. Just don't lose the belt. So Peter Takahashi, the main event referee, goes, "Oh, Hogan's on tonight. We do Fujinami, do this, that, and the other. One, two, kick out." And then another close false finish, one, two, two and a half, and you barely kick out. And so Danny Hodge, come here, brother. So I brought Danny Hodge over. I said, "You are not refereeing the match tonight. Danny Hodge is."
Wow.
So I told Danny, I said, "Here's the deal, bro. I don't know what's going to happen out here, but if something happens, I get hooked or I get in trouble, you get close enough where I can grab you."
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the last thing I want is to get, you know,
double-crossed. Yeah.
Double-crossed. Screw job gimmick, yeah. Or get stretched or get hooked where I got, you know, in a real shoot hole, you know. So I said, if I get in trouble, you know, you get close enough where I can grab you, you know, this party will end if you get close enough where I can grab you. So I think Andre knew what was going on, and he kind of heard what had happened over there. And from that point on, his attitude changed towards me, you know.
In a better way?
In a better way, yeah.
He thought you were a cool guy.
Yeah, because he knew I was going to do whatever I had to do not to lose the belt.
Gotcha.
And everything changed after that day.
Hmm.
He started being nice to me, and "You sit up here with me and drink all day." I'm like, okay, you know, and just it got much better after that little thing.
It was such a great angle, though. I still remember to this day. The biggest thing for me, and it wasn't planned, was when he pulled your shirt off, pulled your cross off, scratched your chest, and there was blood coming down your chest.
It's
like that just made it so much more real. It was such an amazing angle of Andre, the beloved hero, turning on the other beloved.
If you ever want to watch that tape again,
and
you'll notice it, because I'm going to tell you, when he ripped my shirt off, I didn't know the cross was going to be ripped off, but I wanted to cry, and I didn't know if I could. If you see me standing there with my finger out like this, I had Vicks Vapor Rub on my finger. I was going to rub it in my eyes.
No.
Yeah, but if you ever watch the tape again, you'll see me standing there with my index finger out like an idiot. You know,
did
just
you
totally
cry?
Unnatural. No, I didn't have to. I was bleeding. I was like, "Oh, my God."
Yeah.
You know, Piper was interviewing me. It worked.
It was so good.
Yeah, but if you ever see it again, you'll see that.
It looks for the finger.
The fizz anger.
And led to the biggest house, you know, the 93,000 people. And how was the match that night? I mean, it's a classic, but how was it for you putting it together?
It was cool. It was a situation where, you know, Andre was in trouble with his back. And, you know, Vince came to my room. Here we go once again. Vince came to my room. I don't know if he was kayfabing Andre or he wanted to talk to Andre, but you know, he goes, "What are we going to do out there?" So we had a big yellow legal pad. And I hate doing the Diamond Dallas Page gimmick, you know. And I love Diamond. But Vince goes, "What are we going to do out there?" I said, "Okay, argue, push, have him throw the punch, block, one, two, three, pick him up, fall backwards. Kick out, one, two. Andre can't stand up, so he'll be close to the ropes. He can pull himself off the ropes. Slam, one. Second slam, step on my back." I wrote everything out completely. from A to the Z. I wrote everything out in this legal pad, which was a standard Hulk Hogan Plan A match, because I had A, B, and C.
Did
D,
you really?
D if I needed to.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you know, standard.
Sure,
if
of
you
course.
Wanted to draw once or twice or three or four times, sometimes I had to work with four guys, and or like three times around the garden with Mutch. So I'd make it Plan A, B, C, D, and then just rearrange the players and what everybody did.
Yeah.
But the Plan A match was a standard match, and Vince wrote it completely out. He gave it to Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't know if he gave it to Andre or talked to Andre. But afterwards, I said, Vince, this or this. He goes, oh, you'll be okay. Now, see, I to this day don't know if Vince or Andre were ribbing me. You know?
As far as you writing it out?
No, not writing out. Who's going over?
Oh, they never told you before?
No.
Well, how could it not be you?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, he didn't have to put me over. It might have been fine doing a job for him.
I guess it's Andre the Giant, too.
Yeah,
though.
Brother.
He's going to put you over. What are you going to do?
Yeah, so. That afternoon, I saw Vince that morning. He said, well, you'll be fine. What is it?
Yeah, is it a winning? Yeah. Up or down?
Yeah, just let me know. Oh, well, you'll be fine. Don't worry. I'm still working on it. So about 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the building, I said, Vince, what's up? You know, what are we doing here? I think you need to go talk to Andre. Now, I don't know if they're ribbing me or working me. So I go sit next to Andre, who's in a ton of pain, 2 quarts of Crown Royal. You know?
Before the match.
Oh, of course.
And you said he couldn't even stand up. He had to use the ropes to help
him. His back was bad.
Gotcha.
It wasn't from drinking. It
was I got you, but I'm saying he was in bad physical condition.
Yeah, his back was bad.
2 quarts, wow.
That was nothing. It was nothing. But anyway, you know, sitting there with him, and I said, Andre, what are we doing? Don't worry. Okay. A couple hours later, you know, giving me drinks whenever he's not looking, I'm dumping him, bro. Because I'll never make it to the ring if I sit here. And we're there at noon, and we probably don't go on until 8, 9, 10.
Trying to ring, work with him, drink with him.
So there's no way. And so, you know, I just kind of moderate, and don't worry. So we get ready to go to the ring, and Andre goes, right before we go to the ring, he goes, don't worry, I'll take care of you. I didn't know what that really meant.
Hmm.
You know, so we got in the ring, and everything I wrote out, he did.
Hmm.
I mean, it was like he memorized it. Every single thing and I wish we had that yellow legal pad.
Oh, yeah.
Every single thing we wrote in that yellow legal pad was pretty much to the T. It blew my mind. Even when I fell backwards and I was crawling, he picked me up and slammed me once. I go, all right, he's going to slam me again and step my back. He slammed me again and stepped my back. I went, ooh.
Hmm.
You know, Vince got to him, you know. So we got in there, and halfway through the match, you know, he went, no, it wasn't halfway through the match. It was towards the end of the match. We're going along not knowing what's going to happen. I didn't know if where we're at. And towards the end of the match, he goes, slam. You know, I don't know if he's going to fall on top of me or what, but he hooked my neck, put his hand on my thigh, and right when I had him up and turning, he went, leg drop. And I slammed him, you know.
Wow.
Went and dropped the leg, hit the ropes, dropped the leg on him because he was so big. You know,
yeah,
it was
weird.
Nowhere
to go,
and he didn't kick out.
Were you expecting him to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even stand up. I just rolled off him and put my hand up, and I knew what he did for me.
Hmm.
You know, but that's what he did to me. He just...
Why do you think that he didn't want to tell you?
Dude, I don't know, man.
Do you think he was still trying to decide for himself, maybe? Or
I don't know. I don't know if he wanted to see if the match was going to work or...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Amazing.
I don't know, but between Andre and Vince, it's always been like that. You know, it's just like WrestleMania 30, where I just went on called the Silverdome, Superdome, I was at the go, you know, you go to the gorilla position or go position 5 minutes before.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get it. Guy hasn't been here for a while. We don't know if he can even put one foot in front of the other.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you go 20 minutes early?
Hmm.
And this is a short story. All of a sudden, I get the 20 minutes. Oh, you got to go all the way across the other side of the Superdome because Stephanie's busy in makeup and you got to do a press conference. I walked in the press conference. And there were more photographers than I'd seen in a week in the Superdome. And Andre this and Andre that, and it really is a Memorial Battle Royal, and is this going to be every year, and what was he like, and how heavy was he, and was he a nice guy, and did he really drink, and da-da-da-da-da-da, Andre, go back to the go position, go to the go position. Vince, what's going on? I see Stone Cold and The Rock over there. What's going on? Oh, no, you're fine. Just go on out there. So I go out to the ring, you know, and... Hey, everybody, thanks for being here. WrestleMania 30, it's awesome being here in the Silverdome or whatever I said.
Yeah, yeah.
My mind was so far gone from talking about Andre and seeing Stone Cold and The Rock in the
so
corner.
So you didn't know that this wasn't a planned segment?
No. And all of a sudden, I go out to the ring, and do my thing, and standard Vince-ism, here comes Stone Cold, comes right to my face, you know, here it is, you know, I'm not a mark anymore, right. But he gets in my face and goes, you know, it's kind of like saying, hey, everybody, aren't you happy to be here in New Orleans, Louisiana? Yeah. He gets right in my face and goes, hey, does anybody here want me to see you put a can of whoop ass on Hulk Hogan? What do you think's going to happen?
Right.
I'm looking at him. Mm-hmm. Not responding, but just waiting to take it all in and then reply correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm just kidding. We're just out here to tell Hulk Hogan how much respect I have for you. I was like, you know, okay. But it's just one of those Vince-isms. So yeah. When I look back to WrestleMania 3, was it another Vince-ism? Was it him and Andre together? Was it them actually seeing what I was made of after all these years? What was it, you know?
Was it just Andre not wanting to know what to do, you know?
I don't know. But Vince says, the thing that has me, is Vince said, you're going to be okay out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like he knew something. Mm. And then Andre goes, don't worry. You know? Were they just stringing me out?
Wonder,
just
right?
Screwing
yeah.
me one last time? I mean, you know, what was it, you know?
Vince's Jedi mind trick.
You know, Kurt Angle, go stretch Hogan for the first 5 minutes. Hogan go out in WrestleMania 30. Oh, no, don't worry about what they're doing there. What? You
well, know? I mean, that's, you know, and Vince also, too, would also subtly plot guys against each other. I know he did that with me and Triple H for years in the early 2000s because it made for better matches. Shawn and Bret, perfect example. They were friends.
Yeah.
Suddenly they hate each other, want to kill each other. Don't think that the Master of Puppets wasn't pulling some strings there somehow, you know?
He's the best, man.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah, so I mean, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way it went.
You know, so many great WrestleMania moments and matches. Another one that I love, I mean, obviously, the Macho Man, the Mega yeah. Powers, was amazing. Was that something where you guys were kind of, were you straightforward with each other there? Was there ever any heat between you guys there? Or was it at that point you guys working great together?
For years, Randy and I were tied at the hip.
Best of friends, right?
Yeah. Once we became friends, we did everything together. We had a blast. We, you know, just everything. I mean, he lived down the beach from me. It's like I saw him every single day when we were home.
Mm-hmm.
Worked out together every day. Just did everything together. And he was a guy I loved working with. Because, you know, his gimmick was 24/7. He was always on.
That was his real voice.
Yeah, yeah. His real voice. Elizabeth was perfect.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the first night I met Randy when they came in Poughkeepsie, Vince goes, hey, look at this new guy. He had some raggedy-ass jeans on with patches and a leopard's skin headband turned sideways. And he goes, what do you think? I said, oh, it's the girl's manager. I said, if the girl's with him, we can make this work, you know? And, you know, Randy was probably, I don't know, 185, 90 pounds the
oh,
first
really?
Time I saw
smaller.
Him. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, maybe 200, but I, you know, we just clicked, and he was great, and everything went really well. And then when that whole Elizabeth thing, when she left, you know, it was me and my wife's fault, and it all went downhill. And thank God, before he passed away, we got to reconnect. Yeah, we did.
That's cool.
Yeah, it freaked me out too, man, because after all those years, be a man, Hogan, I'm gonna beat you. I mean, we had a little run in at Universal. You know, when he wasn't feeling well, you know.
Was it a TNA thing or was it?
Yeah, okay. I was at a TNA. Dixie Carter wanted to talk to me, and I wasn't working anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I just drove over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had Brian Knobs in the car with me.
Hey!
Yeah. So I drove over there, and all of a sudden, we saw Scott Hall walking up. He goes, hey, Hogan, Macho's in there. What are you going to do about it? I'm like, okay, Scott. And I hadn't seen Randy other than he'd been threatening me, and he put out a rap album. And,
yeah.
You know, whatever. So when I walked inside, you know, this is before we got along. When I walked inside, he had Kevin Nash with him. He had his bodyguard, Brian Adams, with him. There was a big cheese plate of food there on the table. And I said, hey, Mach, what's up? You know, I got nothing but love for you. You know, I'm going to put my hand out. Hey, you, Logan. I said, well, brother, if you feel that way, why don't you take me outside and beat my ass like you've been telling everybody you're going to do? And he didn't move. And I realized, you know, last time I saw him was Spider-Man 290 or 285.
Yes.
And then I saw him, and he was really thin. Really thin. He had on leather pants with a leather hat and a leather duster, and he was all covered up. And you know, I'd look down his legs, and about the size of my forearms, I could tell he'd lost a lot of weight. And when he didn't get up, I just sat there and ate his cheese plate. I just was figured, you know, he was just working. There was the work, and he's mad at me still.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of let it go. And then, you know, we weren't friends forever and weren't friends forever. And one day I was in the middle of my seventh or eighth back surgery, and I couldn't pass an EKG.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there with my new wife, Jennifer. And you know how there's a doctor's table with paper on it? And there's a couple small chairs just sitting. Me and Jennifer were sitting in the chairs. They didn't want to sit on the table. And dude, the door busted open. Oh, yeah, what's up, brother?
Is that out of nowhere?
Macho just walked in. He looked vibrant. His eyes were lit up. And he looked like he was about 235 or 240, really healthy. You know, and he had a wedding ring on his finger. And I said, Randy, this is my wife, Jennifer. And she goes, hi, Mr. Macho Man. You know, she's not a wrestling fan. She didn't know who he was at the time. And we just got married. And I said, wow, I see you got a wedding ring. Oh, yeah, brother, I married my high school sweetheart. And everything's cool. I said, wow, that's awesome. He was super nice to me, you know. And Jennifer didn't know anything. You know, she goes, hey, Mr. Macho Man, you know, we're having a cookout today at the house, and Terry's got three or four of his lawyers over there. How'd you like to come? Well, I don't want to be around any lawyers, but maybe we could start with a phone call, you know? And that was the beginning of it, you know? And then we talked a couple times, and his mom was having some problems because his dad passed away, and I was on an independent show with Lanny somewhere in Canada. And we called Randy and said, hey, man, you know, we're home in a couple days, and let's have a big cookout over at your mom's house, you know, and everything. And we planned it, and he passed away before we could do it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing when you think back to those days, like the younger days, like what the hell were you so angry at each other for? You know, everybody was so mad. Not everybody, but
people change, and we've all grown up. And I know I'm getting off track with this, but I got to say, the thing with the lawyer was killing me, you know, because.
With the lawyer?
The Ultimate Warrior.
Ultimate Warrior. Sorry.
Because the last time I saw the lawyer. Mm-hmm. I had a plane at the time when we were working for Turner. Actually, Turner would put the gas in the car, I think. It was the only way I could afford it. But, you know, the Warrior had flown back with me to Tampa, and instead of going home to Phoenix, he hung out at my house for a couple of days. He was in the pool with my kids, hanging out with Nick and Brooke. It was so gracious, unbelievable. And then we had that little thing with the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior when he called me as a witness, and I just told the truth, you know, and everything went downhill. And I hadn't seen The Warrior forever, and then I saw the YouTube stuff, you know, that was said about me, and kind of just let it go, you know, because I'm in a different place, and, you know, forgave myself first for whatever contribution I may have had to any of this negativity, and forgave him, and everything's cool. I couldn't wait to see him. Then when I go to WrestleMania, I get orders from, you know, Triple H and Vince, don't talk to him.
That this year at WrestleMania?
This year.
Wow.
Yeah, don't talk to him. Let him get through this weekend. We want him to have a good time. We don't want any problems. I said, well, I told Triple H, I said, well, just ate me. I said, he said stuff about Kevin Nash and you. And you know, so, and Triple H said they had already made up. And I, you know, I didn't know what was going on.
Right.
And so then the night of the Hall of Fame, they put me right in front of the podium. And I told Triple H, I said, bro, this is not cool, you know.
Right.
And Stone Cold's on one side. I said, brother, this, you know, this ain't cool, man, you know.
Yeah.
And so he came out and did his thing, and you know, I respected their wishes, didn't say anything. And then the next day at WrestleMania, that Superdome was so big, halfway through the day, I got bored. And me and Nick jumped on a golf cart and had a guy drive us around.
Yeah.
And we rode by a guy in a suit. And I went, whoa, stop. And it was a Warrior in a three-piece suit. And he had his eyes closed. He was kind of doing this, you know.
Moving back and forth.
Yeah. And I don't know what his deal was, but he had his eyes closed. And he was kind of like doing that. And I jumped off the golf cart, and, you know, I can't run, but I kind of trotted up to see him. And, you know, when I started to walk, he was going, no, no, no. I said, no, man, I'm cool. I said, I'm cool. I don't know what the no meant, but I said, I'm cool. And he said, bro, I love you. I said, man, I just want to start over. And I said, I want to apologize. Anything that I did, please forgive me, bro. I mean, I don't know what the deal is. If we can be friends, it'd be unbelievable. If we could do business, that'd even be better. And that darn WWE camera slid around the corner. No, it was cool.
Yeah, okay.
And I didn't know the camera was, because they had a camera on it all the time. I didn't think about that. And so they caught me telling him, you know, trying to make up with him, but I'm so glad I stopped that golf cart.
To say that to him.
Yeah, and the first thing I did was I went back to the gorilla position. First person I ran to was Triple H, said, hey, brother, I got to tell you, I just saw the Warrior and I stopped and talked to him. But it's cool. I said,
Did he say anything to you, Warrior?
Yeah, he goes, oh, Terry, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's on the tape or not because I haven't seen the whole tape. But he goes, oh, Terry, I just don't know, you know, with everything I've been through, you know, are you really telling the truth? And what about all the people that supported me? I said, Jim, all those people that support you are supporting a lot of stuff that wasn't true that you said about me and there's a lot of stuff that was said that wasn't true. I said, this is about you and me, brother, and what's real, you know. And I don't know how much of that is on the tape because I saw the cameras zip around.
Yeah, of course.
But the good thing was I got to talk to him, and, you know, it was really cool, and Vince was okay with it because everything was cool. And then the very next night, at SmackDown, I'm in the ring with Daniel Bryan, and we're doing the gimmick, and we're doing the yes thing. And I come out of the ring, and, you know, when you come out of gorilla position, you know, the guys are standing there, they say, hey, good job, or they don't say nothing to you, whatever.
Yeah.
And I came out of the ring, and all of a sudden, Vince is standing there, just staring a hole through me, you know. And all of a sudden, I did something I never do. I went, like, call me, you know, put my hand, like, I'd never do that. Mm-hmm. Hey, call me, you know, like a girl in the war. Hey,
yeah, call me.
Yeah, yeah, I did that to Vince, and I walked out with Jimmy. And we got halfway back. I said, something's weird. I said, something's wrong. I told Jimmy, I'm going back to talk to Vince. I went back to Vince, and he was sitting down now, and I stood up and I said, hey, man, is everything cool? You know, he goes, look, I've got some really horrible, I got some really, really, really bad to tell you. I'm thinking it's a Vince thing, you know, like we're going to put the belt on you, or you won the lottery. Yeah, right. You know what I mean? I figure here comes the deal. Patterson's hiding out with a clown mask on. And he goes, no, sit down for a minute. I said, he goes, nobody knows yet, but Jim just passed away. I said, what?
Hmm.
And he said, yeah, I got Triple H got a call and put me on the phone. And while you're in the ring, I just got, and he goes, please don't say anything to anybody. So, you know.
Hmm.
You know, him and I were in the car,
and
it came on the radio like a half hour later, you know.
Yeah.
But it was weird. Thank God I got to talk to him.
Yeah. It's amazing because there's a lot of people that said that over that weekend. I know I had Jake on the show months ago, and he said that he had some closure with him as well after years of heat.
Well, the whole thing with Kevin.
With Nash?
Yeah. He said a bunch of crazy stuff about Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the same as what went down with me, but a lot of crazy stuff about Kevin. I actually got in a challenge.
I'll fight you. I'll meet you on the street for $75,000 or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you touch me before a year of MMA training, just all this. Either fight or not. I don't know what the deal was, but so Kevin told me that he made peace with him too. So thank God I got to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Because I think my favorite Hogan match is you versus Warrior at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It was a great, great match. You know, such an amazing moment. So it's good that you're able to have
it
that.
It was cool, me, I knew that match was going to get me over more than ever because they wouldn't let me do a job for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I knew as soon as I did a job for somebody, people would get behind. We want
as a baby face.
Yeah, my God,
sympathetic baby face.
Yeah,
right?
Finally.
Yeah,
you know, it's like my God, you know,
it worked.
And they asked me if I had any problem with the finish. I said no. Just tell me what we're doing next.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that's my question: is what's next? Yes. Always.
What's the story?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that too. You mentioned it earlier on, and I know that we're going, oh my gosh, a long time, but you mentioned being a heel in the NWO.
Yeah.
When you left Vince and went to sign with WCW, you were babyface for a while, and it was okay. But when you turned heel there, that was the hugest shot in the arm for the business, for Hulk Hogan, for WCW, for everybody. Was it hard to convince yourself to finally go heel, or was it something you were waiting to do?
All right, let me straighten out some verbiage you just said.
Please do.
When you went to WCW, you know, you were babyface for a while, and it was okay. It was okay for just a little while, you know, because we were just coming off that craziness in New York, the steroid trial.
Right, and that's what led to you leaving, was all that stuff.
Well, it wasn't, kind of like, and I had split from wrestling for a couple of years.
Right,
and
Thunder
I was
doing Paradise, Thunder Paradise and movies.
Yeah, and I was just doing my thing and not knowing what was going to happen with me in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince had pretty much, you know, and he said it on a couple. I've been watching the WWE Network lately. And he said it on a couple of the shows that he pretty much thought that Hulk Hogan had peaked and we had got as much mileage as we could out of the Hulk Hogan character.
Right.
I had a different opinion.
Yeah.
I want to turn heel at the Warrior match the next Monday Night Raw after the pay-per-view. You know, I want to turn heel then.
Mm-hmm.
I had this Hollywood Hulk Hogan idea back then.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to turn heel then. But, you know, Vince had this vision, and then when we got to, you know, the end of my run, he basically, you know, after the Yokozuna thing and all the craziness with Brett and all that insanity, he pretty much, on these videotapes I've been watching on the network, says, you know, I pretty much figured Hulk Hogan and the character was done. And I said, no, it's not. In my mind, I said, I know if they let me turn heel, training, prayers, and vitamins, I did it for the money. I knew what would happen. So when I went to the WCW, when he said the baby thing was okay, it was only okay for a minute.
Because
as soon as I won the belt from Flair, I could feel, I'd go out every night, I could feel, hear the booze, you know, and the booze, and, you know, the sign would be that we love Hulk Hogan, and the next sign would be, did you take your shot today, you know?
That's what I mean, it was starting to turn. Yeah. Okay, I meant it was like, it was an okay reception from the fans.
I didn't understand. I didn't want people to think it was okay, because it really wasn't.
Oh, no, I meant okay, like, okay, so-so.
All right, I get it.
All right.
Yeah, okay. So-so.
Yeah.
And we ran with it for a while, and then I started doing some of those low-budget movies again and disappearing because I was kind of like, you know.
Didn't know for sure.
And then Eric, you know, had come up with this NWO gimmick. And, you know, he was talking about bringing Hall and Nash in, you know. And I was like, oh, God, I just don't know. And I kept putting Eric off, and I put Eric off. And then I saw Scott come in and went, whoa. You know, because I wasn't actually watching TV. I was on some trailer in California. Doing two back-to-back low-budget movies. And
Suburban Command is an awesome movie, by the way.
I love that one. It was Secret Agent Club and Santa with Muscles. Two real high-end blockbusters. I love Suburban Command.
That's a great – I like it. I think it's a really good movie.
Christopher Lloyd and Shelley
Duvall. Yeah, he's awesome.
But anyway, you know, I kind of like saw Razor come in, and I really didn't dial into it. But the next week, I think it was a week after or a couple weeks later, I saw Nash come in.
It was the next week, yeah.
Was it
one after another?
Yeah, well, as soon as I saw Nash come in and I saw what they were doing, how Eric, when this is where the big boys play, and when they walked, Eric did this to the camera, and it was
like
just,
shooting, like cut it off.
I went, I'm your third guy. It was that quick.
Was that always the plan? Like, we want you to be number three?
Yeah. But so I wouldn't commit to it because I wanted to be healed by myself. I didn't want to be part of a group, you know what I mean? But when it wasn't Scott turning heel, and it wasn't Kevin Nash turning heel, it was more like the Marks thought it was a shoot, the WWE guys were coming in.
Right.
And when I saw them, they didn't, you know, expose that fourth or fifth curtain, whatever the words are.
Yeah.
And they didn't say that they worked there and they were signing a contract. It looked like WWE talent was coming in. I went, I'm the WWE guy. You can't have Sting or anybody else do this. I'm the ultimate WWE guy. Let me do this.
It was perfect.
Oh, yeah, and it just opened up a whole can. Everything I learned from watching Patterson and Ray Stevens and all these guys just backpedaling and being cowards, and it all worked. It just opened the door for me to be the...
It didn't just work. It was a phenomenon.
Yeah,
it was as much of a phenomenon as Hulkamania was in 86, 87.
Yeah, but everything I watched from the time I was a kid, from the best heels, you know, everything... I could steal something from everybody and it worked. I mean, every week I could steal something else and it worked. You know, and it was so easy. It was fun, you know?
Yeah, like you said, just the rare art of backing off.
Yeah.
You know, because that was a problem with Hall and Nash. They were cool heels, I called them. When you worked with them, it was tough because they would come out there and, you know, somebody would say something, Scott would go, ooh, and they wouldn't really be heels, but I thought that you were the third guy in that gang that actually would show some, like, heelishness.
Well, that's what I was trying to explain to Scott about, you know, I don't mind this, but if I'm hulking up, and you go, ooh, and then you're with the money, you know.
And that's what they would do.
Yeah, and that's not cool, because not only are you shooting yourself in the foot, you know, I'm out here away from home and away from the beach, brother, you know, I should be making money. But anyway, we had some wars about that, and I was ignorant, too, because I didn't know what the wolf pack was. So as soon as I heard the word wolf pack, you know, I'm all over it, man, so... Kevin and Scott are in there talking about the Wolfpack and not knowing what the click was or the Wolfpack. I was out making movies. All of a sudden, I show up and say, hey, look at this new Airbrush shirt I had, Hollywood's Wolfpack. Scott and Kevin looked at me. They didn't say anything to me, but I can imagine what they said when I walked out.
Sure.
No, so I was a heat-seeking missile, you know.
Yeah. But there was.
But I was all over it, trying to get shirts going. And, you know, I was all over it, man.
Yeah. There was a lot of different factions there in WCW. Like coming in when I did, you know, I hang out with my guys, and but there was like, you know, Eric would have a room, and you'd have a room, and Macho would have a room, and Hall and Nash would have a room, and Luger would be over here, and Sullivan would be over there, and it's like, who are we supposed to talk to? Like, who's?
It was brutal, dude.
You know, WCW or WWE, Vince is the boss. Done. Yeah. WCW, we weren't really too sure exactly who the boss was, you know? When you say it was brutal, how do you mean?
Well, it was brutal because, and I love Eric to death, and I tease him about this all the time. I said, you're a frickin' mark. You know, you traded in your executive hat, and you became talent. But if you knew now what you knew then, you would have kind of, like, backpedaled a little bit because, you know, he gets so into the NWO thing. The thing that killed me was... the Buzzkill thing. Oh, we got to wrestle tonight, Buzzkill. I'd rather talk to wrestle. Hey, yo, Kev, I didn't bring my gear tonight. Oh, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, stop. You know, and so we kind of like, you know, between Kevin and Scott and me, we all had like different viewpoints of what should be done, you know, and they had the cool thing and the K-Dog thing and, you know, all that stuff. But I go, that doesn't translate out there, you know. You know, so it was kind of like, then I started, instead of coming every night, I started looking at my contract. It was like, I'll come to every second one or third one. And, man, when I would go away for a couple weeks, I'd walk in and go, what is going on? It was like, you know, then Kevin and Scott were telling Eric what to do. So it got crazy, but you're right. It was brutal.
Yeah, and then also to end up, it kept expanding. Went from you three, and then suddenly there's like, you know, Virgil's in there, and there's like 15 guys in there. A couple luchadors are in there. It just kept growing. Like, what, like the focus kind of started getting lost.
Yeah. It got crazy.
Actually, one of my favorite the Hogan moments was when, I don't know exactly why he did this, when Jay Leno came to Sturgis and wrestled.
Yeah.
I think the opening spot, he put you like in an arm bar.
Yeah.
And you stayed in it for like a minute. I'm like, what is he doing? Next day, front cover of every newspaper.
Well, I went to every camera guy. All you did, man. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
You knew exactly what was going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool.
What do you think WCW was so popular, so big, beating WWE, and then a few years later kind of just went down and Vince ended up buying it for the ultimate screw job. But what do you think the demise of WCW was?
Well, before I talk about that, I was in Oakland after the WrestleMania 31 announcement. I was coming from Santa Clara to San Jose. Oakland's in there somewhere crossing the bridge.
Yes.
Oh, I know what it was. I had to go from Frisco to the Golden State Warriors game where they played the Brooklyn Nets. And I pull up to the light, and I see all these gangbangers on the corner, and they can see me, and I'm riding in the front seat of the car. And they go, hey, Hulk Hogan, Hollywood, WCW.
Wow.
I look at these guys. They still don't know it's a WWE. And they
hit, remember?
Yeah, they remember Hollywood. And that's all they tagged me. Oh, look, it's Hollywood for WCW. I'm like, kind of blew my mind. What was the question? I'm sorry.
I was just saying, what do you think the overall demise was of WCW going from the peak to sort of losing steam so quickly?
I think the overall, if I looked, it wasn't Kevin, it wasn't Scott, it wasn't Eric. I think the overall demise was, if you want to look at the real big picture with broad strokes, it was too many people in the NWO. If they'd kept it like the Shield.
Yeah.
You know, like you mentioned, too many people. If they'd have kept it like the Shield and did what they did with the Shield now and actually, you know, put some freight on all three guys or four guys with X-Pac, you know, but when you put Luger in there and Sting in there and Conan and Macho, you know, I think it could have been more than three, but I think what I've watched lately, how they've done the Shield, you know, whether it's because that was the plan or because guys are getting hurt or whatever it is, it's working, you know. And I think something along those lines would have been better. I think that was a single demise of the whole
watering tournament. It down to where, like we said, I mean, nothing against the guys. They're very talented. But, you know, you see, like, Brian Adams in there and Sonny Mike Rotundo's in
and
there.
And then you bring Horace Hogan in there and Brutus. And, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, we killed it. Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
And
I was like, everybody's in the NWO, right?
Yeah, we killed it.
So, you know, it took a few years, but you mentioned now you're back in the WWE, and it's where you should be. I mean, you no matter where you go, WCW, TNA, and these other places, you'll always be a WWE guy. You helped create what WWE is. Now that you're back in, I know they have you come in and out, do different things. What do you think of the company nowadays, and which guys are you looking at and go, that guy's pretty good, that guy's got a future?
Well, I look at it now, you know, since it's sports entertainment, you know. And it's really sports entertainment. You know, we'll have the Muppets on one week. And
Grumpy the Cat.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sports entertainment, and I get it. You know, I understand the numbers, I understand the ad buys, the sponsors. I totally get it. It's a business. You know, and now wrestling has become the foundation or the base to capitalize off of, or sports entertainment is what they call it. It's bigger than ever, more powerful than ever. It's the almighty, all-powerful Vince, who's got this vision that nobody has, such as, oh, you should turn Cena heel, he should do what Hulk Hogan did. You know what? It's not being done. And even though that would be a great idea from you or from me or from all the fans to say, he should do what Hulk Hogan did, be Hollywood Cena or turn heel. Believe me, whatever Vince's idea is for not doing it is much better than ours.
Yeah.
Because he's proven
that
he has the long vision. We may think, oh, it'd be great to turn heel now, Cena heel now, but Vince is thinking 10 years down the road. He's so far ahead of what we're thinking about. So
still a legitimate genius in this business.
Oh, yeah.
Right, you know.
Not missing a step. I mean, as of being around him in the last few weeks in business situations and legal situations and personal situations. He's the same two Vinces. He's the personal guy that is your friend above all, and will give you the shirt off his back. And with business, he's sharper than anybody I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is a true genius. So he hasn't changed a bit. He's just gotten more street cred. He's definitely got a lot. He's got a lot of miles under his belt. He's got it figured out. You know, he's got a bigger vision than he had even back then.
Yeah, right, right.
It really, he's got a bigger vision now than ever. And so at the end of the day, the business now, it's self-sufficient. I mean, you don't have to depend on Hulk Hogan for a
You don't need a face of the company.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. The company is so big now, and it moves so fast. Everything's in fast-forward speed because there's so many choices in the entertainment business.
Mm-hmm.
The internet and digital and cable and satellite and reality TV, this, that, and the other. And there's so many choices that when you call yourself the ultimate sports entertainment company and you're bigger than NBC or bigger than the networks or bigger than the NFL, Vince, you know, is ahead of everybody. And I just think things move faster. Just like if you and I were to argue today instead of wrestling at the Royal Rumble, we'd wrestle at the end of the hour, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it just moves so fast. You
yeah.
know? So that's the biggest changes I've seen. And because things move faster, I've seen a lot more injuries, you know.
Well, that's the thing. You talk about yourself with eight back surgeries. I'm sure it might even be more, and all the knee surgeries you had and stuff like that. And you mentioned your secret in when you were working all these times was staying on the ground and not leaving your feet, not jumping off the top rope.
Yeah.
That's a nightly thing now for most of the top guys, all the bumps that they're taking.
Before it was a finish. Now there's several high spots.
Right.
You know? And so, I mean, you know, I put from whatever it was, I don't know if I put 25 years in or 30. I don't know. I don't know what it was now. I'm so confused. But, you know, to have nine back surgeries and to have both knees replaced and both hips replaced, you know, I just tell everybody, you know, you can say it's predetermined, but, you know, please don't say the word fake.
Oh, I said, I hate that word. It's just business.
Yeah, but it's just not a word that even works, you know, because you got guys that get hurt every day. So if it was fake, I wouldn't be sitting here with all these
that's
surgeons.
That's right. That's right.
You know, but it's moves faster now.
Are there some guys that you like when you see the show?
Well, you know, it's like there are a lot of guys I like, you know, and I just, you know, I can't get by the John Cena thing because he's my favorite because I know the schedule he's on.
You know what it is to be a John Cena.
He's the horse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first time we were all on Vince's plane, and we were going to do Good Morning America, and it was like 4 or 5 in the morning. We were landing in New York, and we, you know, we're talking a lot. I told Vince, this is your horse, and of course Vince knew that, duh. But, you know, I just know the schedule he's on. You know, I would never, ever, ever, ever say Cena sucks unless it was a wrestling angle, you know. And when I see what he does, and he's a good guy, which is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. And when I see what he does above and beyond, you know, I know what it's like to see a kid that's sick or dying every night. I really do. And it can rattle your head, man. It can get to you. And he's done it more than anybody now. For a while, I had that medal. But he's put more time in and seen more kids and been more places than I have. So he's the number one guy. And then, you know, to volunteer every year to go see the troops. And then when he's here, to go to the hospitals.
Right.
You know, and I mean, so... Yeah, he's my guy. He's you know,
the guy that I
respect the most. Not more than the other guys, but he's paved that way so these guys can jump on his back and get over. You know, and they always see everybody getting the Cena rub. Everybody's getting the Cena rub. A lot of people used to get the red and yellow rub. Now everybody's getting the Cena rub. You know, I see everybody using Cena in some way or another to be a pivotal point. And he's the horse, man. And then, you know, that whole Shield thing, guys get hurt, you know, people quit. People go off and do other projects, you know, and you know, sometimes people coming in and out can hurt you. You know, sometimes guys just quitting can hurt you, you know, and then having a couple injuries out of nowhere can hurt you. But to see these guys in the Shield step up, you know, Roman Reigns, bang, just got hurt out of nowhere. I know he'll be back soon. He's going to be over like $1 million. And to see Dean Ambrose all of a sudden step up.
It's out of nowhere almost, right?
Yeah. Step up and start getting over on his own.
I
mean, you know, they gave him the football, but they gave a lot of guys the football. And all of a sudden he gave the football, and this kid's running with it, and he's getting over. And whether he's the the poor man's Piper or 10 times, million times better than Piper, or not even like Piper. But the crazy thing and the awful, he's getting the fans with him, you know, and to see Bray Wyatt come up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
knowing exactly how to work his character, which is so God. Important, as you would know.
Oh, my God. When I found out he was Rotundo's kid, I felt like an idiot. You know, I was like,
he's third generation.
Yeah, man. I said, wow, what a dummy.
Mulligan's grandson.
Let's turn on the TV to watch Bray Wyatt. You know, and just all, you know, Seth Rollins stepped up, man. So It's amazing to see how fast these guys had to get there.
Yeah.
I had 8 or 9 years to kind of halfway figure
out. Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, they're getting thrown out there with 3 or 4 years experience and expecting to run the show.
Yeah.
Would you do another match?
I don't know.
Physically, is it possible? Is that what you're saying? You don't know for or mentally?
I could have one with you right now.
Oh, that's, yeah, we totally could.
Oh, I know I could. I could have a match with you right now.
Yeah, I agree.
Honestly. Yeah. simply after being in the ring with you, we could pretty much do what we did before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, couldn't drop the leg on you.
That's all right.
You know, you could kick out anyway.
No, you just go for it and I put you in the walls of Jericho. You
that's
make
right,
it to the ropes
right.
and punch me in the face and beat
that's
me.
That's right. No, we'll right. do that. You know.
A couple more questions, Zach.
No, to answer that question, yeah. I'm actually training.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to be the main event somewhere, somehow. you know, it took me a couple years just to get through a day, you know, where I could drive a car across, or, you know, I had a hard time walking from here to the door, but now I can power walk through airports, and it took a while for everything to settle in, and, you know, the 9 back surgeries over a 2-year period, it took me a while to get on my feet, and no matter what anybody says about Dixie Carter, I'll never say a bad word about her, because through all those surgeries, she kept paying me.
Yeah, she gave you a job, yeah.
Yeah, brother, so, I mean, you know, I'll never say a bad word about her, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, to get back on my feet now, you know, I keep thinking, oh my gosh, you know, could I do it? You know, and you know, well, the belly's bigger than it was, and the bozo ring's farther down than it was. And when I go out to talk about Susan G. Komen, is your reaction there? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Can you do it? Yes. Can you give me somebody that's really over? Yes, mm-hmm. to work with. You know, if I got to go out there and dig, no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if they were to spoon feed me somebody that was really over,
as an attraction.
Yeah, attraction, like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I was thinking today on the way over here, I should probably quit talking, but I was thinking I live here. I'm watching the storylines on how the Authority is pumping Cena out, and, you know, how, you know, the Authority is going to, Cena can't get anybody to join his team and be in the mark I am. I go, well, I'll tell you what we're going to do, Triple H. Me and Sting are joining Cena's team. What are you going to do about that?
But see, that's perfect. You wouldn't have to do anything. Just
that's what I'm
be
saying.
There.
Just give me the hot tag, brother.
Yeah, get in there.
You know, I'll throw a couple punches, big foot, and tag somebody else.
Yeah, Hulk up.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, can I, could I? Yes, but it'd have to be something that was really thought through and something that I couldn't be in the ring with somebody that really wasn't over. Otherwise, it would just, you know what I mean? I don't mean that way.
Then your giant Bob will work in third match on the card for no reason.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
giant
if I was going to do it, there'd have to be a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing Vince the way I know Vince. Like the way this, they're pushing this Rusev kid, you know, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, something that, you know, otherwise, you know.
Well, there he is.
Otherwise, otherwise Hulk would go out there and it would be, he shouldn't have wrestled that last match. We like remembering the way
you
was.
Don't want that, right?
Well, I've already done that a couple times.
what is your favorite match if you had to choose one or two? Does one pop in your mind?
Yeah, it'd be Andre.
Andre, yeah. WrestleMania 3.
You know, and the second one would be the Rock match because I just didn't know what to expect. And, you know, I had a ton of heat coming back. Like, you know, when they voted for me to come back in, not too many people wanted to see me show up. and I was told, hey, you better bring it if you're coming back. Vince said, you better bring it. I'm like, okay. And I just didn't feel real good about it. And, you know, when they wanted me to go rehearse the match with The Rock, I'm like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Patterson was there and Rocky Johnson was there and me and The Rock were in the ring, and I said, dude, I can't take any bumps here in this warehouse. I'll never, that'll be
right,
it.
Right. There's no fans, no adrenaline.
Yeah, and so when we started, you know, The Rock had this thing he wanted to do, and it was kind of cool because his dad was like, listen to Hogan, Rock. You know, his dad, you know, because I'm friends with his dad, with Rocky. And Patterson was there going, oh, Capace, Hogan, can you do this?
Please!
Can you do this? Of course I can do it, Pat. And to walk out, Andre is the first favorite match, but to walk out and just hear that crowd, you know, after I hit him in the head with a hammer, putting him in the ambulance, ran him over with a subway, to hear that crowd still being loyal, those Canadian fans, they're loyal to a fault. That was a special deal. They said, you can't tell us who to hate, who to love, or who to cheer for, or who to boo for. We're loyal. And they made a statement that night.
That's one of those matches, if you watch it with the sound down, it's cool. You watch it with the sound up, it's one of the greatest of all time. The crowd really got behind that match. Like you said, it was so loud and
it was fun.
Vociferous and crazy. Last question, you mentioned it earlier. Did you audition for Metallica for bass, to play bass?
No.
Okay. That was just an urban myth?
No. Halfway true story. I've told it a couple times, and it always comes back to me. Lars Hogan's a liar. Whatever, Lars.
I think Lars said that I might have been too wasted. It might have happened.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I was doing a award show in the UK, and I had a presenter. I mean, I was a presenter.
Right.
And I had somebody with me. I had Jerry Hall with me, Mick Jagger's girlfriend at the time. So we walked out, and it was an award show for comedy, and her and I presented whatever it was to whatever. So here I go, Hogan working his deal. I go in the back, and she just happens to open the floodgate that her kids are big fans. I said, let me tell you something. Anything you want, I'll send you this, send you that. Of course, the next day, all the Hulk Hogan merchandise was going to Mick Jagger's house, right?
That's great.
And I said, by the way, I know the Stones need a bass player, and I know all their songs by heart. I said, I played music all through junior high, all through high school. I made a living for many years until I got in the wrestling business. If you ever need a bass player, I'd love to audition for the Rolling Stones. I'd have quit wrestling like that to be in the Rolling Stones.
Can you do the bass line and miss you?
It's of course hard. I can.
Okay.
Of course. Please.
Okay.
And
your sleep, man.
And so anyway, center all the merchandise, bunch of ways to get a hold of me, never heard a word back.
Mm-hmm.
Not a word. Fast forward a few years later, Metallica's looking for a bass player. Dude, I sent an audition tape.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What did you audition with?
I had an old Fender Precision.
Uh-huh.
And I had one of those little teeny...
those little practice amps?
Yeah,
sort of
one of those little teeny things that sound like a fuzz box.
Yeah.
Amp, you know? And I turned it way down and turned the gain way up on a recorder, sent an audition tape.
We just played just a little solo?
Yeah, just a bunch of... Played some Led Zeppelin stuff. Yeah. Played a couple old Stanley Clark songs, the old Chameleon stuff. Just, you know, just anything that made any sense.
Right.
And, you know, made phone calls, had my agent Peter Young make calls, got to the manager, never heard back from them.
Okay.
But that story turned into, why they did my audition, which I didn't. I just tried to get a phone call.
Well, no, you sent in some stuff.
Yeah.
You sent in a tape and some pictures,
but the thing
kid.
Was, the bass player that they got, forget about it, bro.
Oh, my God.
Robert
Trujillo. Actually, Cliff Burton and Jason
Newsted.
That's some crazy stuff.
Oh, my God.
You know, he's an amazing player.
When I heard the bass player, the guy with the long black hair.
He looks like Roman Reigns.
Yeah, when I heard him play, I just went.
Maybe I shouldn't take that. I'll take that tape back. Yeah. Hulk, man, it's great to talk to you, man. And I'm going to say this, too. You are the best guy with the fans that I've seen. Every time I'm around you, you're such an iconic figure, not just saying that to float your boat, but people come out of nowhere. Every person that comes, you take a picture of them, you shake their hand, you give them their moment. And I never forgot that. I try and emulate you. I have 1/100th of the fame that you have, but you're always great to the fans, and that's something that's very, very important. I want people to know this. It's really admirable.
Oh, thank you, bro. That's very kind of you to say that. I mean, I try really hard, you know, and I can remember a few times where I had moments.
Yeah, of course.
But, I just try to be cool with everybody. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of nice people out there.
Mm-hmm.
There really are. Sometimes people get excited or get crazy, but they're still really nice people.
And yeah.
I never forget that.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, man. Yes, sir.
Thanks to Hulk Hogan. What an amazing two shows. I can't believe how much I learned about one of my favorite heroes growing up, an inspiration, one of the OGs in the wrestling world. Great conversation. Hulk even texted me and said, thank you so much. I'm getting so much love from social media. It's definitely a different side of the Hulkster. You've never heard him like this before, and he already asked me if he can come on this show again to talk about some more stuff, the more kabuki-ish type things about the business, and I'd love to have him on. Also loved having Speewee on, my best friend. He's a total nutter. He's crazy. If you want to hear more Speewee, let me know at Talk is Jerry. Jericho, at Spiwi. And once again, if you haven't checked out last week's podcast with Bruce Pritchard and Eric Bischoff giving you a taste of what you're going to get January 25th in Philadelphia at Dave and Buster's in Columbus Avenue, you got to go check it out. It's the Great Debate, debating the Monday Night Wars, WCW versus WWE, how it all went down from both perspective sides of the coin. Go check it out. Also, I want you to listen to JBL from last week. Snake Sabo, Rich Ward were amazing. London is Jericho. Paul Stanley, a great 100th guest. Ryback, the WWE Love Ryback's podcast so much on Talk is Jericho that they actually transcribed it and had him do a summary version on Raw. Talk is Jericho, taking over the nation, man. I got so many great guests coming up. One of them, two of them, is going to be Bruce Pritchard, Eric Bischoff. I'm going to tape their show. I'm going to record it and give it to you right here on Talk is Jericho. Of the two of them going head-to-head about the Monday Night Wars, I will be there moderating it and presenting it to you in a few future Talk is Jericho. I'll be there in Philly January 25th at Royal Rumble weekend. It's going to be over in plenty of time for you to make it to the Royal Rumble so you can do both. Show up at 10 a.m. There's going to be a Chris Jericho VIP signing, meet and greet, all that good stuff. Lots of stuff going on, man, as I take it to the streets to see all of you great Jerichoholics and Sexy Beast Talk is Jericho listeners. One last thank you to all you guys for doing your shopping through my Amazon links. I appreciate it. It's the easiest way to support this show so I can keep doing it for you for free for twice a week. You know how to find my Amazon links. I know you do. Say it with me now. Come on now. Podcast1.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, and Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you help me on the process. All right, that's it. After two great episodes, another week of Talk is Jericho is done. But in the meantime and in between time, I want you to stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you next week, next Wednesday. Another first-time ever podcast guest, another legendary figure, as iconic as Hulk Hogan, but in a different field. I'm talking about rock and roll. I'm talking about heavy metal. I told you a couple months ago I went to an iconic musician's house. It's Lemmy from Motorhead. He doesn't do a lot of sit-down interviews. He invited me into his home, and we talked for over an hour and a half about everything rock and roll, heavy metal, 60s, 70s, 80s, drug use, drinking, girls, women, all that fun stuff. Lemmy from Motorhead. Who else will give you Lemmy? Nobody. Who else gives you Hulk Hogan? Nobody. Who else gives you Batista, Triple H, Paul Stanley? Nobody. Right here on Chris Jericho. This is where the stars come, and next week Lemmy's going to be here to talk to you, and I'm so excited. We'll see you on Wednesday in a big yeah.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.